The views and opinions expressed by the following program are those of the host, guest, and callers, and are not necessarily those of this station or the Webster Rock Hill Ministries, its management, or other host or underwriting sponsors. Programs presented on KWRHLP are for educational and entertainment purposes only. Views which are presented are for educational purposes only and are not intended to treat, diagnose, or claim any cure of disease or condition.
This is Amanda LaPlante, and you're listening to Get Real to Heal on KWRHLP 92.9 FM. And with me today is Pete Sandoval of New Insights Counseling, and I am so excited to welcome you back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be back.
Yeah, great to have you here. I want to give a quick shout out to AFC Urgent Care of Brentwood. Thank you so much for underwriting this show. Don't try riding out the flu alone. There's a lot of weird stuff going on this year with the flu, strep, lots of other things, and frankly, it can be dangerous. So it's important to go in and get checked out. Just have that peace of mind. Go get tested. AFC Urgent Care is a great place to go and do that. They're ready to help ease your flu symptoms before they go too far. And they're located across from Brentwood City Hall, and they're open 7 days a week beyond traditional physician's office hours. It's team led by a physician, and so you'll always see a doctor during your visit. You don't have to worry about that. You know that there's going to be somebody there ready to take good care of you. And AFC Urgent Care is proud to underwrite Get Real to Heal, and they're ready to care for you and your family's urgent care needs, especially during flu season. AFCUrgentCare.com/Brentwood. Want to thank them again. Man, yeah, this flu season has been rough.
Yeah, that's
and it's
what I hear.
Continuing to get more and more interesting with all the things that we're hearing about in the news.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So, all right. You know, when we talk about, this is going to be an interesting segue, right? But really, when we talk about immune health, making sure that our stress is under control and that things are well in the body, inflammation is lowered, is so important in order for that immune system to work well. One of the ways that I got back to health was by actually addressing trauma. And you've been gracious enough to come on the show before. Want to make sure and give a shout out that anyone that wants to catch the previous episode that Pete did with us, it was fantastic. SoundCloud.com/GetRealToHeal is where you can find that. But talk to me about trauma. What is trauma? I think people have this big idea of what it is, and really it can mean several things.
Sure can. And before we jump into that, another place, if you go to newinsightsstl.com and go to my podcast section, that particular episode is right there at the top.
I love that.
Yeah.
Yes.
Fantastic.
And any podcast that Pete is on, you should be listening to,
by the way.
No, really. I'm a fan.
Thank you.
So, yeah.
So trauma. Yeah, it's interesting because oftentimes when we think of trauma, we think of that single big incident, the car crash, the mugging, the assault, whatever it happens to be. But it could be something everyday ordinary like a fall where I get injured, could be a medical trauma, surgery, emergency surgery, or just routine surgery. It could be just a series of little things that happen. Even growing up, living in a dysfunctional family where there's not a lot of major things that happen, but frequently when certain incidents or situations occur, my caregivers aren't always there for me when I need them. And sometimes it can really be situationally. I mean, I've worked with families where you have a child who has special needs, and they're a very loving, very caring family, but one or two kids ends up being traumatized because their needs aren't always getting met just for the simple fact that the child with special needs is getting more attention because they just happen to need more from the family as far as resources go, whether it's time, energy, attention, finances, whatever. And so other kids sometimes feel a sense of loss or missing out. And over time, that can accumulate from little t traumas to becoming more of a activated stress response later in adult life of being worried about whether I'm going to get my needs met or I'm going to be happy or I can connect and trust someone else.
How prevalent is this sort of issue in today's society?
Oh my gosh. Well, we could say that prior to even the last few months with all of the health scares, that it was pretty prevalent, much more so than I think we thought or understood in mental health. And these days, just looking around, listening to the news and the things going on, we are getting inundated with various both big and little traumas.
Yeah, absolutely.
Everything that's going on. So it's very important to learn to manage that and take care of ourselves, whether through our own support networks, seeing a mental health professional or life coach or whoever.
So over time, you know, we've had these, you know, whether it was a big T trauma or it was a series of little T traumas, but we've become activated and something has happened or changed within the body and brain. Mm-hmm. How do you explain that?
It's a great question. So if you think of the stress response cycle, for instance, something grabs our attention. We look, we orient, what's called just orienting, and there's that initial startle response. My body stiffens. Visual acuity narrows. We focus in on where's that coming from? Is this safe? Is this not safe? If it's safe, we drop back down. If we're not sure, then we're going to evaluate further. Maybe there is something coming towards us. We move into fight or flight. Do I stay in the situation? Do I have to flee? Am I in a particular location or environment where I have to fight back? Do I fight back? Can I fight back? If the system becomes overwhelmed by that, we can even move into the next level, which is called the freeze response. And that means that we actually go into shutdown mode. So instead of being all adrenaline amped up and everything, fight or flight, we move into what's called dorsal vagal shutdown, or freeze and immobility. In somatic experience, we talk about it as tonic immobility. And essentially, it's the body's secondary level of self-preservation. The body will secrete endorphins and reduce the adrenaline cortisol that's going through the system, because it's now going into self-preservation. Vital organs, breathing, respiration, and brain activity are the primary focus, keeping us alive. It, by slowing down the heart rate, if we're bleeding out, if we're wounded, then it actually reduces the chance of bleeding out. So it's all about keeping us alive as long as possible until help can arrive.
You know, a lot of times I talk with my clients about, especially dealing with autoimmune disease, mm-hmm. where our body is attacking itself, essentially, yes. right? And I certainly have dealt with a lot of this. I think for a long time, I really felt like my body was betraying me.
Mm-hmm.
And I love practitioners like yourself that can break it down and say, okay, let's talk about what's going on in the body. And really, what I've realized now is there were multiple different triggers that were underlying my disease states. And as I've been able to peel things away, I've been able to get back to a state of homeostasis. And right. that's what the body really wants to do.
Yes.
And anything that's going on in the body, typically in the functional or integrative view, we believe that the body's not making mistakes. There are these reasons. And it's really actually, its whole goal is to keep you alive, right?
Absolutely.
To stay alive.
Yes. And it's interesting you bring that up too. First of all, yes, you are correct. Our body is always seeking its highest means of keeping us alive and survival in whatever capacity that we have at that point in time. What can happen that's an interesting compounding effect is if we are vulnerable to trauma, we have traumas, and then at some point we develop chronic health issues, it now becomes a chicken and egg kind of thing. And so sometimes we're vulnerable to it, something happens, or we have some health issues, and then we start to be stressed about the health issues. And so the stress about the health issues compounds the inflammation. And so untangling all of that can be really, really tricky. However, some of the people I work with are exactly in that position. So my role is to first kind of help to untangle some of the stress around the health issues as they work on that piece. And then as we peel back, as you said, peel back the layers, we start getting into maybe some of the earlier seeds of trauma that might have created some of that vulnerability to the chronic health to begin with. And as we dig in and work on those pieces and release that, now the body has a higher capacity to heal both the physical and the emotional health.
When we talk about little T traumas, things that add up over time, and then we talk about those big T trauma moments, mm-hmm. You know, are the treatment techniques different that you would approach? How do you decide how you're going to approach treating someone?
That's an interesting question. I'd like to come back to that. If we could table that for just a minute.
I would be happy to do that. Yeah, I'm sure there are many layers to that question.
Yeah, but what I'd like to touch on, if we can, before we get there, is to kind of talk a little bit about, so I mentioned the stress response cycle before, and what can happen is that if that stress response doesn't get a chance to get resolved, it can get stuck. It gets stuck both in the brain and in the body. In the body, it's basically wherever we are in that particular stress response cycle. It could be tension, it could be tingling, it could be shut part of our systems start to shut down, or they shut down temporarily, and then that energy gets stuck. The brain will hold on to the initial trigger or what created that in the limbic system, in the part of our emotional brain. it'll hold on to that because we didn't resolve it. So it wants to make sure that if that ever happens to us again, that we make sure that we're alert to it and we can deal with it and hopefully resolve it the next time. And so that's how trauma ends up getting stuck, is it's not about what happened to us, the trauma itself. It's about what happens during and after. Are we able to discharge the energy that our body was trying to utilize to keep us alive or not? And if we can discharge the energy and get support, particularly emotional support of some form, we can contextualize it, understand what happened, realize I survived it. I have some agency. I know how to deal with it in the future. And I'm okay. Oftentimes, particularly when we're growing up, that doesn't always happen. And that's when things get stuck. And so we get triggered in the brain through our five senses, sight, sound, smell, taste, touch. Something will come in and remind us of it. Our body senses it and activates again for fight or flight. But then the part of it that's stuck is then going to try and resolve the next time around.
Wow. Okay. Let's go back to that question. So somebody walks through your door, mm-hmm. right? And how are you assessing them? How are you figuring out how to approach treatment?
That's a wonderful question. Yeah. So essentially what I do at the beginning is I try and get as complete a history as I can. I focus on not just the mental health pieces. That's where we start, what brought them in. But I'm also checking in on how was their, you know, developmental life growing up? We mentioned in the last episode about the senses. We talked the ACEs study and how that impacts long-term health. So I'm doing that. It's a 10-question questionnaire about early childhood development and significant things that may have impacted it. If there's any kind of part of their story that involves potentially some trauma, I have an assessment related to that that I'll give them to kind of pull that out. Get some more detail. Again, what kinds of trauma or traumas might they have been through? If it's chronic health, then I want a little bit of history around that. If there's medical trauma, again, as much history as I can around that. And I start to form this more complete picture of where the low-hanging fruit is, what might be the most recent things that may have occurred, and how can we start to peel those away? And then if there's a link back, and sometimes the link is very clear to me right off the bat, sometimes it'll show up or evolve as we're working on the present day kind of stuff.
Okay. And then let's talk about some of the latest techniques. Now, you know, I'm a trauma survivor, mm-hmm. little T's and big T's.
Same here.
And yeah, EMDR has been life-changing for me. Could you talk a little bit about what that is, what that modality is, so that people know?
Absolutely. EMDR stands for eye movement desensitization and reprocessing, and it was developed in the late 80s, early 90s by Francine Shapiro. She discovered it by accident. She was just kind of walking along, thinking about some of the things going on in her life, and she was moving her eyes back and forth as she was thinking about it, and realized that by the end of her walk and contemplation that she felt a lot better. Her brain had kind of somehow discovered its own pathway to healing around the particular issue that she was figuring out. She began to investigate this further and realized that this was life-changing and began to do some research. Since then, we've had neuroscience research, which has validated, just like in REM sleep, as we move our eyes back and forth, it is activating both hemispheres of the brain and allowing them to connect in a way they normally can't during our waking life. And what that also does is it connects into the limbic system, the emotional part of our brain. And so what EMDR essentially does is it creates an environment or atmosphere for the patient or the client to begin to tap into some of those earlier memories, the traumas. They get activated in the limbic system. Remember, I talked about the stress response cycle. We're kind of bringing that to the forefront and allowing the person potentially to process through it. Through a series of sessions, they are allowed the opportunity to move through it, release the energy and emotion, create some new context for themselves, and hopefully then gain some resiliency afterwards.
It's absolutely been essential to my recovery, mm-hmm. and getting my diseases into remission, but also just getting my mind back on track and really, really reclaiming my life in the way that I wanted to. So I'm so glad that you were able to share that a little bit about what it is. I also want to ask, so I've noticed with my therapist, We started with the eye movements, but now we actually have vibratory.
The tappers?
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So they, you hold one in each hand and she turns it on and it vibrates alternate left, right. Yeah, exactly. It's just a different way of creating the bilateral stimulation. There are some people who believe that the visual field is probably the most impactful. Some people that I've worked with have had some difficulty, either dizziness, maybe they've had a concussion, eye issues or something like that, and it doesn't quite work for them. And some people also can't visualize or go in deeper into either their body sensations or the actual memory that they're trying to work on unless they close their eyes. So that allows that to happen a little bit more organically for some folks.
Interesting. And, you know, I had a functional neurologist on the show ages ago, and shout out to Austin Jones if he's listening. He was amazing.
Oh, yeah, he's great.
Oh,
I love him.
He's so great. He's so great. Again, mm-hmm. soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal for this and other episodes to check those out. But yeah, he was talking also about a treatment for anxiety, just bilateral stimulation as well, just touch therapy.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something that you ever employ in your practice or you've talked about?
Touch therapy and bilateral stimulation. I'm not 100% sure.
Yeah.
It sounds vaguely familiar. But it does correlate with a little bit with EMDR. And even with EMDR, one of the things you can do is you can tap, or the person can tap on their own legs, alternate left, right, left, right. That's another way to do it. Sometimes we teach people to do it with their hands, because sometimes you don't want to draw too much attention to yourself, but you're feeling a little overwhelmed and stressed. And just doing that and focusing on the sensations is a great way to start bringing your stress response back down into equilibrium.
I feel as if I've noticed children do that naturally.
Yes, sometimes kids will do that. It's a self-soothing technique that sometimes kids will do that. They'll tap or tap their feet. And even music in its rhythmic quality will help to do that, because that's exactly what it's doing. It's activating both hemispheres of the brain in a very unique way.
Fascinating. It's mm-hmm. so interesting. All right. So let's talk a little bit about SE, somatic experiencing, right? Am I saying that right?
Yes.
All right. I know literally nothing about this. I'm so excited to learn from you today about this.
So somatic experiencing was developed by Peter Levine, actually in the 70s and I think mid-late 70s, early 80s. It sprung out of his observation of animals and the way that they seem to just get up from a predator and shake themselves off, and then they move on. And as he continued to observe it and noticed it consistently in the mammalian world, he decided to explore that more with people, and that we have a similar quality, a similar capacity to discharge that energy. And as he went deeper and deeper into it, and of course, as neuroscience developed, and he explored a lot of different philosophies and modalities, he kind of integrated or came up with this therapy called somatic experiencing, where essentially what we're doing with clients is helping them to mindfully tap into or notice the sensations in their body that are connected to where the stress response cycle is stuck. And it's amazing to watch and certainly to experience myself, because again, part of our training is we go through it ourselves so we can embody it and live it and really know it from the inside out. But to notice that, and I can notice a particular sensation related to something, and then for some reason, an image of something that happened a long time ago will just float up into my head, and then I'll notice a different sensation somewhere. And what we're actually doing is we're moving between sensations, images, thought, meaning, and helping the client to deepen their understanding of their body's physiology and how it's trying to express itself. And we're creating what's called a pendulation, a movement between the vortex of trauma and the counter vortex away from it, and expanding the nervous system's own resiliency to both contract and expand in and out of the stress response. And as we build that resiliency, instead of getting overactivated, stressed, or depressed and shutting down, moving to that really deep freeze, we kind of slowly move them into more of a healthy pattern back and forth. And the body's able to release that stress response, discharge the energy, and then embody what it feels like to be on the other side of it and look back and go, wow, I feel so much different. Okay, so notice that and sit with that, how much it feels differently to see that experience and to feel what it is to be on the other side of it. And as we embody that, our body internalizes that sense of resiliency. I can make it. I'm okay. I got through it. Rather than being overwhelmed like it used to feel.
Yeah. And you know, I can't, if I had a dime for every time that someone told me to notice that, sit with it over the last 3 years or so.
That's right.
It's really powerful though, just to have that kind of presencing and to move through and notice the things that are changing in my body. Now, we haven't talked about it as somatic experiencing per se in my therapy process, but after you just explained that, that's essentially what we've been, what we've been doing.
Yeah. And what's interesting is sometimes in EMDR, some therapists will just organically incorporate it. Some learn about it and weave it in, which is what I initially did, kind of weave it in. And then you use the eye movements to both help the person process through it and also to kind of maybe activate it and bring it up. And then on the other side, using the eye movements to strengthen the neural pathways. There's a newer technique that I recently was trained in called accelerated resolution therapy. And accelerated resolution therapy, what I love about it is it kind of takes a little elements of both of those and also throws in something called memory reconsolidation, which I'll swing back around to. But what accelerated resolution therapy does, it's different. With EMDR, if you remember from your experience and anybody else who's gone through it, is a lot of times it's notice this, notice this, notice that.
Right.
What your brain is doing during that bilateral stimulation is it's kind of free associating. It's just kind of going with whatever happens to float up into your conscious awareness as you're experiencing the bilateral stimulation. With ART, what we do is we actually pick one specific trauma memory and we focus only on that. It keeps it contained. One of the risks with EMDR is sometimes people become overwhelmed initially the first few sessions because it's jumping around between various traumas. And that can be overstimulating. Sometimes the body actually goes into shutdown because it's overwhelmed and you have to pause or you have to use EMDR to kind of contain it.
Yeah.
What ART does that is different is it actually pauses the one memory you're working on and specifically says, let's pause that for a minute. Let's process some of those sensations out. Let's bring you back down into a state of equilibrium or at least the ability to tolerate some of the sensations that are starting to come up from you. So we keep from overstimulating as we're processing, and then we come back to the memory, and we pendulate. Remember I talked about pendulation in
right. SE?
We pendulate back and forth between those two. It starts to desensitize that one memory, and then each time you go through the memory now, you're getting more distance from it, cognitively and emotionally. And then we re-script it. And by re-scripting it, you now decide an ideal way you would have liked it to play out, and it creates what's called a mismatch in the brain between what actually happened and how I wanted it to happen. Because what we want is we want the hippocampus, the amygdala, and the emotional part of the brain to let go of it. Remember I talked earlier about how the brain holds on to it to keep us safe. When we create the mismatch and start to create resiliency, the brain says, oh, in that part of the brain, I can let go of this emotionally charged memory because I'm not charged around it anymore. And it can let it go, and it goes into long-term storage. So we're not changing the actual memory, but we're essentially using the brain's normal ability to let go of that traumatic memory, move it into long-term storage, and then we use bilateral stimulation again to strengthen that sense of resiliency, to increase it. And there are other pieces of the protocol afterwards that just continue to build on that sense of, I'm okay, I feel good, I'm wonderful, I've made it. And that's how it works. And I think that's why it's faster and more impactful in a short amount of time than EMDR, because we're reducing that sense of overstimulation. I've also weaved SE as well with clients. If they have trouble with bilateral stimulation alone, trying to bring down the desensitization, then I might weave SE into it to help release some of that energy and then go back and use the eye movements to strengthen it.
How much of your job is thinking and how much of it is feeling?
It's more feeling than anything else. It's really an art. There's a lot of, it's science informed, but it is very, very artful in that I'm really tracking where the person is, what's going on in their body, what they're telling me, and I'm putting together a picture of their experience. And then I'm trying to let them inform me where they need to go and trying to guide and facilitate that. I'm not the one doing the work. Their brain and body is doing the work. I'm just keeping them kind of within a certain river, if you will, or keep them kind of going with the flow of where the body and brain want to take it.
You know, we've got about a minute and a half left. I have so many more questions for you. Mm-hmm. I'd love for you to stick around and do another
episode. That would be great. Yeah, awesome. Absolutely.
Awesome, awesome. So we'll do a deeper dive there. But in the meantime, how can people reach out to you? You know, who are you serving at this moment? How can people reach out and connect with you?
Sure. My phone number is 314-287-3088. I am at newinsightsstl.com on the web. I also have a Facebook page and a Instagram that people can just look me up out there.
Great. And we've actually got a comment here on Facebook. By the way, you can go to facebook.com/getrealtoheal or facebook.com/AKLaPlante and check out the live broadcast, Facebook Live, of this and other episodes anytime. We've got a comment here that says, I don't like EMDR too much, prefer CBT. Maybe we can touch on that in the next episode.
Sounds great to me.
Yeah, I'd love to know more about that as well. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today. I really appreciate it. Pete Sandoval of New Insights Counseling.
Thank you.
Yeah, this has been Amanda LaPlante of Get Real to Heal. And you can check out more information about me online at amandalaplante.com. Reach out anytime for a free consultation. I'm here for you, and I want to be of support. You can also hear this and other episodes of Get Real to Heal at soundcloud.com/getrealtoheal. Go make it a great day.